given us. And that's what we're going to talk about specifically this morning. We're going to talk about when you are dragged away and enticed, like a prey of a hunter who has set some bait out. You're dragged away and enticed by a thing called peer pressure, where we let other people take you away from the one who alone you owe your life to. And you give your life to others when they tempt you to walk away from God. So peer pressure is what we're talking about this morning. Now here's what I want you guys all to do. Take two fingers like this. Hold them up. Everybody doing it? Put them on the sides of your head. This is your thinking position. And I want you to think back to the first time you can remember experiencing peer pressure as a child. The first time you remember being pressured into doing something that you knew was wrong or that you didn't want to do. And as you think, you can take your hands down now. But if you need to think some more, just put them up there. It really helps. Let me give you a little definition, a little idea of peer pressure. We're talking about the peer puzzle, all right? Where do you fit in? Last week we talked about how do you surround yourself with great friends? What's the kind of friend you want to look for? What's the kind of friend you want to be? And we just had like probably 10, 12 scriptures that just spoke wisdom about friendship. If you missed it, you can get to it online. You can look at the discussion questions. It has all the verses and all the points and all that. Or you can even listen to it if you want to sit down for 15, 20 minutes and listen to it. It's all on morewake.com. This is called Wake. Morewake.com is our website. But this week, we're going to talk about, you know, sometimes when you're putting together a puzzle, you're tempted to squeeze a piece in where it doesn't fit. And we talked about how insane it would be, because the puzzle wouldn't work, if you cut off a piece of the puzzle to try to make it fit in a spot where it didn't belong, or if you taped an extra piece on to a puzzle piece to make it fit in a spot where it doesn't belong. And that specifically is what peer pressure is. All right? It's some other person or group of people in your life that are trying to get you to take away from who you are or add to who you are to become something that you're not. So if you couldn't think of something, think of that definition. All right, my life is a puzzle piece. God made me a certain way. He washed me white as snow, and they're trying to add on to that or take away from that to change who I am, all right, to get me to do something that is not who I am. So think of the first time, all right? Just everybody, I want you to remember that first time. And I'm going to walk you through my first time. Was anybody's first time you remember peer pressure earlier than second grade? Raise your hand. It was earlier in second grade. Wow, that's a lot. All right, my first memory, you can put your hands down, was in second grade. And I saved all my yearbooks growing up. This is my 1987. That's when I was in second grade. You guys were not even born. I realize that. But this is my second grade class, Mrs. Tucker. All right, and that's me down in the bottom left corner. David Peniel. There's my second grade picture. Yeah. A little gap in between the teeth there, but other than that, that hairstyle is kind of coming back in nowadays, isn't it? It's pretty funny. You guys that are wearing that little swoop haircut, that's 1987, Colin, okay? And here were my two best friends in second grade. The first one was Travis Sousa, and the second one was Wade Chambers, all right? So there's Wade. And then go back and show Travis. All right, I want you to get a picture of Travis and then back to Wade. All right, you see who they are. You can go back to the class picture now. So I'll show you where they are in the class. Notice Travis is just a few over from me on the bottom row. He's kind of in the middle. And then Wade's in the upper right corner. The only two Boy Scouts in the class, which I don't know why I gravitated towards the Boy Scouts, but they were my best friends. And I have a lot of stories about other people in that class. I had several girlfriends off and on that year in second grade. There's some good stories there about my second grade romances, but I'll save that for another day. But I want to tell you about the first time I remember peer pressure coming into my life, and it was with Travis and Wade. We were out at recess. Second grade, you still had recess. Does anybody still have recess in here? No. That is awesome. That's awesome. We still had recess. In second grade, did you ever have the days where you had two recesses in one day? Yeah, we had two recesses, okay? So we're out at recess. The rule at recess is you can't go back inside until the bell rings and everybody lines up and you go back inside. So we're all outside playing at recess, and I'm hanging out with Wade and Travis. I don't remember what we were doing, but we found on the playground some balloons, and we thought that they were water balloons. We were like, oh, we should fill these water balloons up. This would be so fun, all right? But we couldn't find anywhere outside to fill them up. So Wade and Travis, being the good, upstanding Boy Scouts that they were, came to me and they said, hey, why don't you go inside and fill up these water balloons? And I knew we're not supposed to go inside during recess. But Wade and Travis, who were really cool in my eyes, they wanted me to go inside, and they would think it was cool if I went inside. So they pressured me. They pushed me. They tempted me. They said, come on, you should do it. It'll be fun. It'll be awesome. We want to have these filled up. Why don't you go inside and do it real quick? Okay. So I take them, and I go inside. And I go up to the sink in the classroom. I just went in my classroom, put the thing on there, filled them up. You know how back then it's really hard to tie water balloons when you're in second grade? So I just filled up a couple and just was holding them. I was like, okay, I guess this is cool. It's like I'm milking a cow. And so I take these water balloons, and I managed to get inside and get back outside, and I didn't get caught. So sometimes peer pressure pays off. That's not the lesson, because here's the rest of the story. So I go up to the guys. I'm holding the water balloons, and I'm like, look, I got water balloons. They're like, cool, tie them. I'm like, I don't know how to tie them. And you just got a little bit embarrassing, but guess what? Neither do they. So we're stuck with these water balloons. Well, we're standing there trying to figure out what do we do with these two full water balloons. And the bell rings. And so everybody goes to line up. And I'm like, ah! So I'm still wanting to be cool. So I just get rid of one water balloon, but I'm like, maybe I can still do something cool with this one. So I toss it. You know, water goes everywhere, and the balloon stays on the ground. And then we go get in line. And we're all like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do with the water balloon? What are we going to do? So we're all lined up, and Mrs. Tucker, our teacher, comes outside, and she sees me with the water balloon. And she's just, I can tell, she's smart enough to know you had to go inside to fill that up, and what are you planning on doing with that? And she says, David Peniel, you don't ever want to be called by your last name. She says, you need to get rid of that right now. And I was like, okay, okay. And so I took the thing, and I was just holding it in my hand, and I just started to let the water out. And Wade and Travis go, ha, 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 looks like you're peeing. And they started laughing, and some of the other kids started laughing. And I started feeling good about, you know, the laughter that I was getting. So I started just acting like I was peeing. Woo! And I'm just, like, making everybody laugh. I'm going up and down the line, stopping it, starting it, squirting it, you know, everywhere. Mrs. Tucker watches the whole thing. David Peniel, get inside right now. And so I had to go inside. She left everybody else outside in line. Mrs. Tucker sat me down, and she just got up in my business. And it was not fun. And I had to sit down, and I had to write 200 sentences. And I don't remember exactly what the sentence was, but the sentences you had to write were about what you did. So I don't know if it was, I will not pretend to be peeing out of a water balloon or what. But it was something along the lines of, I will not go inside during recess, and I will not, you know, pee with a water balloon. I don't know what it was. But I had to write 200 sentences, all right? And let me just tell you, I had to sit down, and she sat me down with a pencil and paper, and I'm writing sentences. And as I walked in the class, all those people that were laughing at me outside now, they weren't so impressed with me anymore because I was sitting there in trouble. I wasn't a hero anymore. I was the troublemaker now. I was the bad kid in the class that got in trouble. Because in second grade, you love your teacher, you respect your teacher, and anybody that offends your teacher or makes your teacher mad, they're your enemy. And I can't tell you, you know, how much weight I felt even as a second grader. I sat there and I felt guilty. I felt ashamed. I felt just embarrassed that I had let my teacher down, you know, and that I let myself down and I did something that I didn't know. I felt like the other kids were watching me and judging me. And even as a second grader, it was just kind of this guilty, empty feeling. And so as you thought about the first time you ever felt peer pressure, I want you to think about if you had any of those feelings, if you went along with it. And I learned two lessons back in second grade that I'm going to share with you guys today. And I don't think I probably worded them exactly the same way, but I know that in my mind, I learned these two lessons about peer pressure. I didn't always follow them, but I learned them, and I want to share them with you today. The first one was this. When it comes to temptation, there's always more at stake than what you think. And let me explain this real quick. See, here's what I thought was at stake, was impressing Travis Sousa and Wade Chambers. I thought what they thought about me and their opinion of me was the only thing that mattered and the only thing that was at stake. But when it came to that temptation, I didn't think about all the other things that were at stake. I didn't think about the fact that I'd have to be writing 200 sentences and then I'd have to catch up with my schoolwork. I didn't think about the fact that the rest of the class would judge me and look down on me. I didn't think about the fact that I would upset my teacher. I didn't think about the fact that she would call my parents and tell them what I did and I would get in trouble at home. I didn't think about all that was at stake. I didn't think about the guilt and the shame that I would feel for doing that. I just thought about, right then and there, what Wade and Travis thought about me. But this is true, guys. When it comes to temptation and peer pressure, there's always more at stake than what you think. And the second lesson I learned was this. When it comes to temptation, the real issue is who you trust. See, did I trust what Mrs. Tucker told us about going inside at recess? Did I trust what I knew in my heart was the right thing to do? Or did I trust Travis Sousa and Wade Chambers? You see, the real issue is who you trust. You're going to listen to somebody. Who are you going to listen to? That was the real issue. The real issue wasn't whether it was right or wrong. It was clearly right or wrong. And I think we know more about what's right or wrong than we like to let on. The real issue wasn't whether or not I was doing the right or wrong thing. It was who I trust. And so I want to open up the Bible now and take both of these points a little bit deeper and show you really what's at stake and really who you can trust. So let's go back to when it comes to temptation, there's always more at stake than what you think. And I want to show you a passage from James chapter 1. All right. James says this, when you are tempted. Okay. Notice he doesn't say if you're tempted. He says when. Every one of you is going to experience peer pressure. That's why we're talking about it here. All right. If this is your first time at Watermark or you don't come here very much, I want you to know we do our best to talk about stuff that matters in your life and not just talk about stuff that's pointless. All right. The Bible is brilliant because God wrote it and God made us and he teaches us how to live. So when tempted, God knows we're all going to be tempted. We're all going to face peer pressure. Nobody should say, God's tempting me again. No, God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each one of us is tempted when, by his own evil desire, he is dragged away and enticed. See, here was the thing. When I told the story, it was Travis and Wade dragging me away, right? But this says, by his own evil desire. This exposes a deeper truth. You're going to have people tempting you left and right all around you. But the real issue is your own evil desire in your heart. What was my evil desire? Wanting the approval of man over the approval of God. All right? And so when my own evil desire to get the approval of Travis Sousa and Wade Chambers took over, I was dragged away by them. I was enticed into something I shouldn't do. And then, pay attention to verse 15. This is what we're really going to stick on. After desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it's full grown, gives birth to life. Is that what it says? No. I'm seeing if you were paying attention. Sin, when it's full grown, gives birth to a new, better life. Wrong again. Pay attention here. Sin gives birth to death. This doesn't mean that if you follow Travis Sousa and Wade Chambers and you go inside and you fill up a water balloon and you start peeing, all of a sudden you're going to blow up and die. All right? I'm still alive. All right? But you want to know what died that day? My purity, my character in the eyes of my classmates and my teacher, the respect from my teacher, the trust from my parents, my witness. If I wasn't a Christian then, but you guys are Christians now, know this, that when you give birth to sin through peer pressure, your witness dies, your ability to proclaim Christ and represent Christ, a little piece of that dies. And here's the most significant thing that dies, all right, is your intimate relationship with God. Sin always separates us from God. So there's a little bit more at stake than what you think. If you just think what's at stake is the approval of the people around you, you are wrong. When there is peer pressure and you have that desire, it gives birth to sin when you're dragged away and enticed, and that sin always gives birth to death. And the most important thing that happens right there is your fellowship and intimacy with God when you sin is taken away And that is death, my friends. That is absence of full, true, real life that's only found in a relationship with God. If you've ever been on a spiritual high, you know what I'm talking about. If you've ever been to camp, to Pine Cove, or Kanakuk, or T-Bar M, or you've been on a retreat with us, or you've just had a moment of truth and depth in your relationship with God, you know that that's where life is found. And when we sin, we step away from that life and we put up a wall between ourselves and God. There's always more at stake when it comes to peer pressure. It separates you from God. The consequences are epic. You lose your true, full life. You lose your purity, your character, and your witness. There's more at stake. And the real issue is who you trust. Do you trust the people around you, your peers, your 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old friends? Or do you trust God? Do you trust God? And here's what I mean by that. Because God doesn't like miraculously speak in every specific situation. I couldn't turn to John chapter 4, verse 3, and it says, "Thou shalt not pee out of a balloon." Right? It's not like I had that command from God, and God was, you know, saying, "David, remember I told you, do not pretend pee." You know? The real issue, though, is who you trust. And here's what I mean by that. Look at 1 Corinthians 10:13. This just groups all temptation, all peer pressure together. No temptation has seized you, has gotten a hold of your heart, has gotten a hold of your mind. No peer pressure has gotten a hold of you except what's common to man, all right? Every temptation, if you boil it down, is the same. You're choosing something else over God. And so it's common, right? You're not going to experience any pressure that someone else on this earth has not already experienced. You are not that unique. But God's faithful. He understands that. God knows we're tempted. God knows that we experience peer pressure. He will not let you be tempted. You have to trust God in this. He's never going to let you be tempted beyond what you can handle. God's never going to give you something that you can't handle. You might be sitting in the middle of a really tough situation right now. You might not have any Christian friends. Your family might not be Christians. You might have horrible things going on. Death, disease, divorce, sin. Deception and lies. You might have all kinds of things going on in your life. God will never give you something you can't handle. If you're going through something really hard right now, this is just a bonus lesson. That must mean God must trust you a lot. And God must think that He wants to be near you and help you handle it, and He knows that you can. All right? God's faithful. He won't let you be tempted or burdened with anything beyond what you can bear. But here's the thing. Here's the lesson. This is where we're going to start to wrap up. When you're tempted, God will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it. So here's your choice, all right? When it comes to temptation, the real issue is who you trust. Do you trust the people that are tempting you and pressuring you to do something to make you into a puzzle piece that is not who you really are, all right, to take away a part of you or to add on to you? Or do you trust that God has a way out for you? God has said that He will always provide a way out, all right? And so do you trust God's way out of whatever temptation you're facing, or do you trust the pressure that's around you? And I want to tell you a story to illustrate this. But before I do, I want to ask you to put your fingers up like this and put them on your head one more time. I already asked you to think about the first time you were peer pressured. Now, I want you to think of the last time. The most recent time you felt peer pressure. It might have been in this room today. But let me jog your memories. Everybody close your eyes. Keep your hands on your head if that feels right. I'm going to give you some options. Eyes closed, please. Were you tempted? I'm just going to give you a list. Jog your memory. Were you tempted to compromise what is right to be funny? Were you tempted to compromise what is right to gain acceptance? Were you tempted to use bad language to fit in or impress somebody? Were you tempted to compromise what is healthy in order to be attractive? I'm talking about eating there. Talking about dressing there. Were you tempted to compromise what is modest in order to look attractive? Were you tempted to cheat to get good grades? Were you tempted to cheat to please your parents? Were you tempted to cheat to help someone else and to gain their approval? Were you tempted to watch movies or listen to music that fill your heart and mind with evil? Were you tempted to visit a website that satisfies your curiosity for lust or sex or any other kind of evil? Were you tempted with physical relationships with the opposite sex to go too far than what you knew was right? Were you tempted by alcohol and drugs? Were you tempted by? Those are some things to jog your memories. When was the last time you felt peer pressure? God is faithful. He will provide a way out. Let me show you how real quick. I'm going to read you a story. How many people in here are baseball players? Any baseball players? All right. Anybody watch baseball? The Rangers are in the World Series. Does anybody know how many perfect games have been pitched in baseball in the history of Major League Baseball? We had 47. Does anybody really think they know? What do you think? T thinks 2. No. 0. Nope. Here's the correct answer. It's 18. All right. Since 1900, all right, there have been 18 perfect games pitched. That means it's a shutout, no hits, all right, no walks. It's a perfect game for the pitcher. And I'm going to tell you a story about one of the most recent ones. After turning some heads in 2008 during his 13-7 rookie season, that means 13 wins, 7 losses, Armando Galarraga had fallen on some hard times. He had a disappointing sophomore campaign. That's his second year. It wasn't very good. And actually began the 2010 season in the minors, struggling through spring training. So we had a rookie in 2008, Armando Galarraga. 2009 wasn't great for him. 2010, he ends up in the minor leagues. But then he came back into the leagues, in the big leagues, and it was his third start of the season. And everything fell into place. All right? Every opposing batter who stepped to the plate in the first 8 innings headed back to the dugout empty-handed. And by the 9th inning, word had spread around the world about what was happening. And everybody rushed to find a television to watch baseball history. All right, so we've got this guy named Armando Galarraga. He is a nobody pitcher. He'd been in the minor leagues. He finally gets back in the big leagues. And all of a sudden, he is in the 9th inning pitching a perfect game, of which only 18 have been thrown in the history of Major League Baseball. And so everybody tunes in. And it is the top of the 9th, meaning if they get 3 outs here, the game's over, they win. Okay? And here's what happens with his first pitch of the 9th inning. He's got a perfect game going.
And a swing and a high fly ball toward left center field. Jackson is on the run, still going. He makes the catch. Oh, Jackson! Austin Jackson in left center field. A sparkling play. Oh, my goodness. Unbelievable. Boy, did he cover some real estate here. Looking like a young Willie Mays. Armando Galarraga with nothing but a smile.
All right, if you don't play baseball, that was a crazy good catch. All right? That was over his shoulder outside. All right? He rescues Armando's perfect game, but that was just the first out of the inning. Armando pitches another out. Now there's 2 outs. You see, his perfect game almost came to a crashing halt the first pitch of the 9th inning. Galarraga hung a ball over the plate, and Cleveland second baseman Mark Grudelanic smashed it deep in the gap in left center, but Austin Jackson, who was playing shallow in center field, got on his horse and made an amazing over-the-shoulder catch, one step from the warning track. The Tigers dug out, and Comerica crowd went crazy. No doubtless, fans in their homes let out a loud cheer. The next batter, Mike Redmond, grounded out to short, and Cleveland's last hope came down to Jason Donald. On a 1-1 pitch, Donald reached for a ball off the outside of the plate and hit a soft grounder between first and second. Watch what happened.
Ground ball, right side. Cabrera will cut it off. Galarraga covers. He's out. No, he's safe. He is safe. He is safe at first base. And here comes Jim Leland. Oh, my goodness. Jim Joyce said he was safe at first base. You make the call. Cabrera, Galarraga.
Did he miss the base? He's out. Why is he safe?
He must have missed the base.
Are you kidding me? Why is he safe?
You see right here.
is he safe? Oh, my goodness, Jim Joyce, no!
He was out, but the umpire called him safe. You see, Major League Baseball is one of the only sports remaining that does not do a replay. They don't let the umpires go and look at the tape. The umpires make the call, and the call stands. And in the heat of the moment, when everything was moving fast, all Jim Joyce could do was say safe. Because everything was moving so quick, he missed it. And he stole Andrés Galarraga's perfect game and his place in history. Now, every one of us that watches that go, no, in my book, he had a perfect game. But in the history books, it's not there. That's death, people. That is death. And you know why it was caused? Because they did not have the ability, they did not have the skill to pause and make the right decision. So this is your application, people. The next time you experience peer pressure and you are tempted, I want you to pause. That's it. Just pause a moment and think about two things. One, there is more at stake right now than what I think. Because what I think is just the approval of these people, but there's more at stake. Life is on the line. My purity is on the line. My reputation is on the line. My integrity, my character, my witness for Christ with all these people, it's on the line. I'm hitting the pause button right now. And the real issue is who I trust. There's more at stake, and here's what's going on. Is God going to provide a way out for me? I'm going to hit the pause button, and I'm going to look for my exit strategy. Because I know God is faithful and will provide a way out. That might be walking out of a room. That might be turning off the computer. That might be calling somebody for a ride. I don't know what it is, but God has given you a way out. All you have to do is pause. But too many times in our life, we make the call right there. And God's given us a pause button. Just stop. Think about what's going on. He wants to give you a way out. That's the message, folks. When it comes to temptation, there's always more at stake than what you think. And the real issue is who you trust. And the application is pause. Next time you experience peer pressure, which could be today. Let me pray. Lord, I thank you. You give us your word and that you are just faithful to understand how our lives work and that you love us. And you want us to be near you and you don't want us to turn our backs on the debt that you have paid for us. You've paid it all. And all to you we owe. Help us to pause and turn our lives towards you. In Jesus' name, amen.